And my friends, we did indeed get in touch just now with Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North. We'd promised to talk with him in the last hour, but we're going to talk with him now. Again, the number to reach the show is 800-687-0790. Let's talk Texas, my friends, but first let's talk Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North and his new book, American Heroes on the Home Front, The Hearts of Heroes. I've already told you several times today where these book signings are going to be. Many of you supposed to be in line right now listening on News Talk 1290 in Wichita Falls because he's there for Books a Million. And you listening there in Wichita Falls, get over there, get a copy of the book and buy it. Oliver North will be in Hastings tomorrow at Amarillo at noon, and then in Lubbock at 3:30 at Barnes and Noble, and then on Friday evening he'll be down there. For those of you listening in the Petroplex in Midland at the Barnes and Noble at 7 p.m., and then on Saturday morning, those of you listening on KYYW, he'll be in Abilene, the key city of Abilene, at Lifeway Christian Store at 9 a.m., Well, my friends, a man who needs no introduction to Northwest Texas, we welcome fellow soldier in the political and culture war facing our nation, and a man who takes every chance he's given to honor those who wear or have worn our nation's military uniform. Honor. It's retired Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North. Welcome to Pride on Texas, Mr. North.
Robert, I apologize for being late. It was the Oklahomans who did it at Fort Sill. They just lined up those soldiers, just got out, jumped on the bus. And we're now headed your way.
So we'll blame it on the Oklahomans, but we have a lot of good Oklahomans listening out of our Wichita Falls affiliate.
They were all there, I'll say.
That's a good sign, Colonel. Let me ask you a question. I listened to an interview you did with some folks at our affiliate in Wichita Falls, and you mentioned a couple of things because you were it back in the Reagan administration. I mean, you were the counterterrorism whole bureaucracy, pretty much you and your secretary. You said we were deeply surprised at an enemy that would commit suicide to kill us. In other words, people there's an enemy out there that doesn't fit the regular definition of warfare who would be willing to even kill themselves. All the soldiers in the war kill themselves to kill us. And you said that really surprised us as a nation. And you also said the boys in your book have seen it up close. Tell us about the book and how it relates to that idea of a very different enemy.
Well, let me just go back before 1983. We expected that the terrorist who was going to commit a terrorist act wanted to survive the experience. And that's how the Red Brigades, the Bader-Meinhof, the M-19, the Red Army faction. I mean, we had listed all of those terror organizations right down there in the Situation Room from a wire diagram of all of them for the president. What we missed was the radicalization of Islam, starting with what the Ayatollah Khomeini did in 79, then training all these people like the Hezbollah and fielding those people from the so-called Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps that went out and encouraged the recruitment of people who would blow themselves up, so-called martyrs. And we missed that. And that's what, of course, by April of 1983, we were seeing that writ large in a place called Beirut. I mean, you had the U.S. Embassy blown up twice starting in April. Then you had the attack on the Marine barracks and the French barracks and the headquarters of the French International Force and the Marine International Force near the Beirut airport. And then, of course, we've seen countless examples of it since. And, of course, what happened was it wasn't just the Shiites responding to what the Ayatollah Khomeini did. The Sunnis then decided, hey, we're going to tell everybody we can be just as radical. And so in the midst of all of that, a guy by the name of Osama bin Laden goes out and starts building madrasas with the purpose of teaching young men to hate and to kill themselves, trying to kill us, an infidel. And so we missed that. And that, quite frankly, is the consequence of what happened way back in the 70s when we had Jimmy Carter telling us we really didn't need human intelligence.
Right, the Church Commission and everybody else, they just decimated HUMINT. I mean, I just thought we could use computers and satellites to know what was going on everywhere.
Yep. Yeah, I can remember Stanfield Turner coming up to the Naval War College where I was a student in 1980 and saying, no, we can read a license plate on a Volkswagen from 65 miles in the air. And the young CIA officer who was going through the training course asked the question, much to the embarrassment of the CIA director for Bill Clinton, said, okay, so you can read the license plate. who's in the car and what are they talking about?
What are they saying? Exactly. And it's so it's so obvious. And yet this was a complete national move in the 70s. And the radical left and the McGovernites, of course, just, you know, they equated everything to do with intelligence gathering and everything to do with Vietnam or a war they didn't like. It was all wrapped up in one bundle and thought of as a rotten egg. And they really they really did hurt us on that. I want to ask you a question. I know there's a lot of folks in Wichita Falls that want to have a book signed, and so I don't want to keep you from them too long.
We're still running down the highway.
Oh, okay. You're not there. All right, well, you folks listening on News Talk 1290, he ain't there yet. So sit in your car and listen to Proud on Texas. How's that? There we go. That helps us both. America was duly impressed by your testimony in Congress about fighting communists in Central America during the Iran-Contra hearings. In fact, just your demeanor turned the tables on the anti-military and anti-American way Democrats. Just in those hearings, it was an amazing thing to watch, and I watched it all. And but I want to ask you this: maybe we were more impressed by your secretary, the gorgeous and very good Fawn Hall. Do you stay in touch with Fawn Hall, and tell us a little bit about her?
Well, I introduced Fawn Hall to a young Marine major, and when he got transferred to the West Coast, she moved out there to be near him. And unfortunately, when he got deployed to Desert Storm in 1990, Desert Shield it was initially, she took off with some Hollywood type. I can't remember the name of the guy, but got her unfortunately very much involved with controlled substances. I've stayed in very close touch with her mom. The reason why that young lady got the job is my original secretary took very ill, and I needed a secretary with clearances, and I told my boss, the National Security Advisor, that day. And he said, and Wilma Hall said, well, I know somebody who's got those credentials, and she's got the clearances already. She works at the Pentagon, and it's my daughter. And I said, Wilma, that works for me. Never even saw her, but she said she could type well, and she did, and she had the security clearances, and she did, and she came to work for me. And that young Marine major pined away for years after this gal took off with the rock stars out there. But, thank the Lord she has gotten herself in the rehab, I think has moved back in with her folks.
Well, that's good to hear. I've always wondered, you know, we were so impressed because back in the day, the penthouses and Playboys and everybody were offering her, you know, massive sums of money to take her clothes off and pose and all these things. And unlike some other people of the era at the time, it was no thank you.
No one offered me anything to take off my clothes. I'll have to say that.
Yeah, they didn't offer you any. Tell us about your book, American Heroes on the Home Front.
Well, Robert, this is the kind of the sequel, if you will, to a documentary I did in 2006. The Marines allowed us some unprecedented access to the families of those with whom I was deployed from Camp Lejeune, North Carolina. So we sent a Fox War Stories camera team down to Camp Lejeune. And, of course, Ramadi, Iraq, which is where the battalion was, and I was covering them, was at the time the bloodiest place on the planet. Long story short, when that documentary aired, my wife of then 37 years, turned to me and she said, I'm glad you made that because you never really understood what we were going through here at home. So the title of this book, which is a trilogy of American Heroes books, is American Heroes on the Home Front, the Hearts of Heroes. It's not just about the Purple Hearts. It's about the hearts of those that love them back here in the States that have gone through with them all of that happens when a young soldier, sailor, airman, guardsman, Marine gets terribly injured and what it takes to recover. And so it's part war story and it's part love story. It's a little different than some of the other books that I've done. But it's also a testament to the remarkable young men and women who serve our country in uniform.
Let me ask you a question back to the Reagan administration days and all the hell the media and people put you through and tried very unsuccessfully. I think it blew up on them to make you a poster child for American interventionism and all the things that are bad in the world. Things seem to have worked out pretty well for you, and we know they worked out really well for your boss, Ronald Reagan, and probably one of the most beloved politicians, and certainly in the last 100 years in this country. But what was it like on your home front with your family going through this with the press? Weren't they camped out outside of your house for like a year?
But only every day and night. And I met a guy last night when I was signing books that said he was part of the UPI stakeout at our home. And I said, were you there on Christmas morning? He said, yeah. I said, I remember what happened. And, of course, what happened is that I had told our kids and the security agents who were protecting our family had told them, don't go near the fence while the reporters are out there. Well, the reporters were out there 24-7 for months and months and months. And I looked around on Christmas morning. I was missing our two youngest. And I finally saw him coming back in the front door all rosy-cheeked because it was very cold. I said, where have you been? We delivered hot chocolate and cookies to the reporters, Daddy. And I said, I've told you before, stay away from me. And, of course, I got the answer that just kind of cuts to the quick. Daddy, it's Christmas, and it's cold outside. So their mother raised them right. I spent most of my, you know, first 25, 26 years of our marriage running around the world doing things that Marines do. I was blessed to be a Marine. That was all I really ever wanted to be. And I'm blessed that Fox News gives me the chance to keep company with heroes to this very day. But I would also tell you that I made a big mistake spending more time with my wife and my children while they were growing up. And we're getting on with that. We just celebrated yesterday our 45th wedding anniversary. And, of course, I've been home for 7 of them. How's that?
Well, congratulations on making it that far, though. Even if you weren't home, she loves you a lot, and that's why she's put up with you all these years. Let me ask you one more question before we let you go on that subject. You said this book is about American heroes on the home front. What was the most striking thing to you that seemed to be a commonality across the families worried about their husbands and wives deployed overseas?
Good question, Robert. The common ground for all of the young men was why did you join? And it was because of 9/11. Even the youngsters I was with in July, mm-hmm. just a few months ago in Afghanistan, would say that. And I'd say this, we're saying, you're talking about Afghanistan now. That you were in, what, fifth grade, fourth grade when that happened? Do you remember it? Yes, I do remember it. I joined because of it. I didn't see it happen. Teachers wouldn't put it on in our classroom, but I know it happened, and I never want it to happen again, so I joined the Army, Navy, Air Force, and Marines. Then I'll ask him, why did you join this particular branch? And almost invariably, it will be because they knew somebody who served in the Vietnam War, or in some cases, a grandparent who'd served in World War II or Korea. And I say to him, well, what did that mean to you? And they said, I'm serving today in whatever branch they're in, because I never want to have happen to soldiers what happened to them. Now, many of these young guys have no idea that I served in Vietnam. Right. But they do know that that uncle or that parent or that friend of theirs served in a war that was essentially despised by the American people.
Right.
Thankfully, we have not done that to these heroes. Because the ones that I served with in a place called Vietnam were heroes as well. And that the young women were married to them have gone through an incredible ordeal. Many of these guys would have died. Notice in the book, the story about Tim Lee, who's a friend of mine from Vietnam, lost both his legs above the knee. Tim Lee would, if most of those who had suffered a traumatic double amputation, would have died. Today, most of them lived. And so you have some grievously injured people. There's great graphic photographs in this book that, well, I wouldn't have put up on air because Fox News and I have agreed I'm not going to show the face of a wounded American or a dead American. And I haven't. Thousands and thousands of news reports and documentary work that I've done over there, never shown one. And I'm not going to. But in this case, the family members and the members of the service themselves said, we want America to know why we came in the service, what we did, what happened to us, and how we're getting better. That's why I say that this book is part war story, part love story, because defection of their mates is allowing them to get better without psychotropic medications and life. One last point, Robert. This is the war since the American Revolution in which every person serving in harm's way is a volunteer.
Yep.
And that happened since the Revolution. There was always a draft or some form of conscription. But in this war, there's not. And yet, we still have 1.5 million young Americans on active duty. 2.4 million of them serve in this war. And I really admire them. The American people have got to come to know them, because the classical definition of a hero is a person who puts themselves at risk for the benefit of others. And that certainly defines the men and women in this book.
Very good, Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North, you folks in Wichita Falls. He'll be at Books A Million here in a little bit, if he's not already close by. Get your
book. We are close by.
All right, we'll be telling everybody, Colonel North, where you're going to be tomorrow and the next day as well. Thanks a lot for the time, and enjoy signing those books, and tell everybody hello for us here on Proud on Texas.
Will do, brother.
All right, I appreciate it.
It's great to be back in my home state. Thanks.
All right. That's right. You are a native Texan. I'm going to make sure that we get that on the air. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Robert.